episode 2276 of the number one podcast at Apple Podcasts, the Job Clerk. No BS Job Search Advice Radio. I'm Jeff Offen, the Big Game Hunter, and welcome. Today is an interview I did with Mark Anthony Dyson last week, and we cover a wide range of things in a really interesting interview. I enjoyed talking with Mark, and I'll simply say we cover lots and lots and lots of stuff that I think will keep you interested, because if it's not one topic, it's another that's going to get you hooked. Hope you enjoy the show. Hope you give it an honest review wherever you listen to it. And with that, we'll be back in just one moment. So my guest today is Mark Anthony Dyson, the voice of job seekers in so many forms, podcast, blog. You may see him on TV at different times. A known authority around job search. Mark, welcome. So great to have you back on yet again.
Yes, thank you, Jeff. And it's always great to work with you because you are the OG in the space. And I love it.
Yes, I am. First podcast, November 2010.
Yeah. I remember. I remember I actually started listening to you when I was looking around to see who was doing podcasts, and yours was one of the first ones that came up. In fact, you interviewed my mentor, Damian Burkle, who yes. we did at that time. This was 2013 or 14, maybe, at that time when his book came out. So, yes, sir.
It's funny with Damian. That was my other show, Job Search Radio, that I discontinued 3 years ago after 800 some odd episodes. And he was my second guest.
That's when I caught it.
And he ran all over me on that show because I didn't know what I was doing as a host. But enough about me. On to you. So here we are. And, you know, we're coming up on the holiday season, and there's all this sort of stuff going on in the economy. And we've been hearing about the Great Resignation. We're now hearing about another version of COVID. What are you seeing out there? Tell me all about it.
Well, you know, if I could spend the next 2 hours telling you all about it, but we'll go with some of the basic things that are happening. One is that people are unsure what to do yet another season and holiday when they should be job searching. If you're out of a job, you should be job searching. There shouldn't be any question at all what you should be doing. You should be connecting with people on LinkedIn, connecting with people in your family, asking everybody you know, how can you find the job that you want? And hopefully you wanted something specific instead of, well, I'll take anything I get my hands on. I understand the desperation, but people tend to follow through. The pandemic didn't change people's habits and people's nature. You know what I mean? For some people, they were thoughtful. They decided that they're going to go through this time without the lousy job that they used to have. Understood. We got that, right? It's the Great Resignation. But there are other people who are lying in the cut, so to speak, because they're not sure how to conduct a job search, and they should be job searching. They should be doing all the right things. Listen to you and I and a lot of people we hang out with in order to find out what's going to be their best move. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people who are stagnated because they claim they don't know what to do. But yet there's so much information out there now. The pandemic has ushered in all this content. A lot of it is, we can argue whether it's good or bad, but I know listening to you, they could try to listen to me if they like.
And,
you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and it just seems like every Christmas season, people seem to look like what they dropped a glass, and they don't know what piece they should start picking up first.
And it's so sad because, you know, we're ushering in the best time of the year for networking. It's the easiest time to reconnect with people.
It's the alley-oop. Absolutely. It's the alley-oop. And you can't get any more friendlier than people around Christmas time. There's no other time. Maybe there might be one other time that might be better, and that was after 9/11. will probably be the only easiest time where to talk to the person that's right next to you and to ask questions, to have a deep discussion. Now, you don't have to have a deep discussion on the first try, but at least get name, number, and try to build some social equity with that person. It's not too hard, but I understand some people have that challenge because whatever reason, we don't know what triggers people in and out of being social, but we do know that you have to be social in order to make to the next step in a less seamless manner.
Now, when you said social equity, social capital, what do you mean by that term?
That means that I'm going to be friendly for a while, get to know you, get to know how I can serve you before my needs. I understand that, again, people come out of desperation and start to apply this. Start thinking in terms of 6 months from now. You might be unemployed 6 months from now, but the time is not now to ask for when you're unemployed 6 months. Time is to get to know people, start to warm people up to you. And mostly, again, you do better in seeking out what people need and you get a better response. So that way, when you need that one or two things, it's a very casual ask. It's not a running start that you would have for like track or for a long jump, you know?
You're not out there begging people.
Yeah, well, the thing what comes across is that people don't think that begging is, if I ask somebody for a favor, it's not begging, but people are now so sensitive that it is. The favor is sort of, it depends on the person. Sometimes there are people you could ask the first time. You just don't know who that is. So it's better to serve people first. It's better to help people first and be helpful. Even if you're helping other people and it's being seen, people will see, wow, it's not all about him. And that's where people get triggered. It's like, this is just about you. Well, if you're helping people, then it won't come across as that.
And as we say in New York, you don't come across like a mooch.
Yes, yes. And the mooch is pretty bad. I haven't heard that term in a long time. Wow.
Yeah, it's one of those terms that understandably has disappeared from language.
Yeah.
But when you
very New Yorkish, which I'm from originally New York City.
You know that about you. But no matter. And one of the things, folks, I'm going to remind you of is this is the great time of the year, not only to network with new people, but with former colleagues, people from your past who you let drop off your radar. And, you know, you've been reluctant to get in touch with them. You don't want to seem desperate. And you don't want to seem like you're begging or being a mooch, do you? Isn't it a nice time to network with the old timers from your life?
Well, it's a great time to network with family. You never know who family knows. And I think people are afraid to let family know, let close friends know, because maybe you've been successful for a long time and you've been helping people all along. And now it's kind of the walk of shame if you should lose your job for whatever reason. Look, if you've been employed for a while, you get fired, so what? It's not of the past, the dialogue that we used to have where you got fired, you did the walk of shame. And or if you got laid off, then you felt kind of bad because now you can't do. You can still do. You can still be proactive, even if you got fired and laid off today. You could turn around and start meeting people, look for ways to do contract work, temporary work, a lot of other things that you could do, even if you need some cash right away. But all of that, take care of the needs, but remember that for me and what my messaging has been the past couple of years, that job search is a lifestyle. It's something that you should have been doing anyway, whether you had a job or not, something you should be doing in some sort of way. You may not be perusing the ads or, you know, Monster, Indeed, all those places. You could be connecting with people. You could be collaborating with people. You could be creating work to show what you know and what you've been, you're some kind of helpful way. So if you do those things, as simple as that, you're continuing your job search because you want people to come to you, not just you go begging to people. Wouldn't it be great if somebody just came to you and said, I heard you were out of a job. You helped me so much. Let me introduce you to a few folks I know to help you along the way. That's how networking can work.
And that's the way it will work if you put yourself out there and risk being all the rejection that you're afraid of happening to you, and just give. Give it away. Yeah,
just give. And it doesn't matter what industry you're in. Networking translates across every single industry that anybody can think of. Any industry. And you'd think that all the possibilities are there at your fingertips and at your lips, that all you have to do is say, hi, my name is, and I would like to, I saw that you did or that you do. And one of these days, maybe we can catch a cup of coffee over Zoom or at Starbucks. Yeah, you can still do it at Starbucks. It's okay. Or wherever it is, or some kind of social activity. It could be parent night, and the parent next to you, your kid's playing basketball, their kid is playing basketball. That's a connection. You just never know where that may be. But I understand, too, there's a second thing that people are dealing with and during this time is mental health. And mental health comes up a lot during the holidays because they associate it with family, togetherness, friendships, laughing, presents giving, and not everybody has that. So people get triggered around this particular time just by Christmas alone. Christmas decorations trigger people. I know someone that, you know, they had a little battle with a family member because he didn't want and she did want to decorate, and he wouldn't have it. And they had a big battle, but he finally gave in. But he, to see the bigger picture, is that her family has a large amount of people who are well connected. You don't understand the way you treat your spouse, the way you treat people in your family will have something to do with connection at some point or another. So all that to say that at this time as well, mental health is something we see a lot on LinkedIn, especially the comments and things. You can look up mental health now through LinkedIn and you'll see posts that go on forever now. And I think people are trying to work through that in their lives. And that's nothing that we should mull over. Mental health, I've said years ago in the article, mental health is the new dental health. And is something that's visible now that some people can't sit. People can hide it, but you can't hide it for very long because eventually it comes out into your life and it comes into your appointment. So you should take care of that as well.
Amen, brother. I'll also say, folks, that if you're the one who's feeling depressed or down or not really wanting to socialize, get some support with that. In the case of the girlfriend, the husband, the wife who's not in your situation, start talking to them about how you feel and take the encouragement from the other. You know, it may be hard at the beginning, but your performance on interviews will be enhanced if you're out of the shell, if you're out of that feeling of being down. Because when firms hire, they want to hire a personality and not just simply a toolbox. And
great point.
They want to get that connection. Excellent. With the person that they're interviewing. And if you're feeling badly, that's not an attractive quality in your job search any more than it is in dating, right?
Let's park it there for a little bit, but I think you hit on something I think is very important, and that is presentation. Presentation is everything in the interview. When you're upbeat and you're positive and you come across positively, that is often the differentiator between a lot of other candidates, especially if they have a long line of people they're interviewing. Now, these days, of course, they're being a little bit more selective, but hear me out. When you're upbeat, you're sharper. You come across as you're much more knowledgeable as you begin to explain your career, your experience, and why you're the fit. As I say, you need to show that you are the prescription to the job description. You actually are providing these solutions for them. And it will come across when you're upbeat, when your voice is up, when your eye contact is there, when you are starting to believe that people are listening to you and that they need to hear what you have to say and your presentation is everything. I've been in plenty of interviews as a hiring manager at one time in my life, or a couple of times in my life. And the person that really connects is that person is very positive. They may be short on some skills, but they would be a great addition because it's contagious. Being upbeat makes the other person or other people in the room, if it's a panel, be upbeat as well. It changes the total tenor. And that's what people look. So you're being perceived as a game changer, not just like you said, I love that, a toolbox. You don't want to be the toolbox. You want to be the solution. You are the drill. You are dynamic. And you should portray that because that's very important in your presentation. And especially if you're not feeling it, you've got to find some moments where you're connecting with yourself and believing that this is the time for me to get it on and just Amen. Go get it.
And it's so funny. Years ago, I interviewed a woman who was number one in her class in Wharton. Mm-hmm. And she'd been on 12 interviews and no offers. Look, it makes no sense.
Right.
And a friend of mine asked me to sit down with her, and I did. And mm-hmm. I knew within 5 minutes that someone had taught her to be professional. Mm-hmm. And it's not that you're trying to be flamboyant or something that you're not, but they want to attach to something other than your skill set. They want to know that you're competent,
right.
But they also want to know the human being too, and to get a mm-hmm. feel for someone as well. And once I loosened her up a little bit, mm-hmm. She got 4 offers on her next 4 interviews because she became a human being.
And that's the way it goes. But you know, a lot of times it's a matter of telling the truth. And I think sometimes people who are interview coaches and resume writers who try to train people on interviewing, they tell them what's proper and right and that you gotta, instead of looking at the person and what's in front of them, what they're feeling, what they're doing, and maybe even what they're doing wrong. And if a person's gregarious, why can't they be a little bit more gregarious appropriately in an interview? Because that's part of their personality. That makes the difference. Companies cannot train personality. They just can't. They don't have the resources. Nobody does. But you bring the personality and some of the skill, a lot of times is enough to take you over the hill because everybody else didn't show personality. Everybody else isn't. Yeah. And we've seen it a bunch of times. Who isn't tempted, even if somebody didn't have the skill, but they had a ton of personality, say, he would be a great asset for my team just to give them juice every morning.
So true.
I mean, everybody's hired. We've done that. But I mean, the good ones would say, but he doesn't have the skill. Maybe we can interview him again a little bit later when he gets some more skill. But all in all, to say that the personality is such an important part of the presentation. That's why the mental health has to be, or at least some kind of mental perspective that you are, this is a presentation and you have to be on. The spotlight is on you.
So true.
And that's important.
So there's another topic I want to talk with you about.
Hit me.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that.
No, well,
I'm not a violent guy.
I'm
a violent guy, but I will bring up the fact that a lot of people get the wrong advice, especially the younger folks.
Yeah,
they get the wrong advice from grandpa, dad, mom, all the cast of characters who really mean well, but it's the advice from the last century.
Yes, mom and dad, unless you've been reading a lot about job search, about careers and how it works, unless you've been on a job search yourself and maybe have, you know, fell and failed several times, or that you've gone 4 or 5 months without getting an interview, you submitted a couple of hundred applications. Now that's a bad way of job search, but you'd be much more empathetic towards your son and daughter who are going through some of the same things. And it's okay to say that, I just don't know. But a lot of times parents, we need to stop giving this bad advice, the century old attitude that the company's going to take care of them once they get it.
You mean they shouldn't go out there and drop off a resume?
Who's going to let them in the building?
Now, I get it in retail.
And at one time before the pandemic, there were stores interviewing on the spot. As soon as they dropped off an application, they would be interviewing on the spot. The pandemic changed everything about that scenario. But all to say is that, you know, job search, getting a referral makes all the difference in the world. And instead of parents giving advice, give the kids names and numbers of your network. And say, hey, call them. Do you want me to call them before you call them? Or I'll text my group of friends right now and I'll give you all their numbers and you call all of them to have a conversation. Even if the child doesn't know what he wants to do next, get them started by giving them names and numbers. It's very interesting conversation. Years ago, that was one thing my dad did. My dad was old. My dad died when he was 93, almost 94. He actually just turned 93. And, you know, years before that, he was in his 70s or something. And I'd stopped working at this one place that drove me crazy. He gave me names and numbers. He didn't tell me that you should be applying to all these jobs and you know, it's about the numbers game and all those things that are so 1999. These days, give them names and numbers, have them have conversations. And if you want to ask them what y'all talk about, cool. But as far as strategy, you don't know what this pandemic has bought on. It's different from even 2019, much less 1999. There's some things that are the same, but there's a lot of things that are very different. So, and it looks different and people are working different. And every fiber right now, because of the Great Resignation, is being tested. And if it's not passing the test, in other words, young people really are fighting what we had come up with, that's what's being tested, then it's going to change. And it's going to change from even the advice from 3 months ago that I would have given. So I think it's really important that parents really get on straight where their place is in this particular job search. If you have a job search in this pandemic or in the last 5 years, minimally, but mostly in this pandemic, the last two, then you need to guide them. Maybe if you really want to help, pay Jeff to coach them. I don't do coaching these days. So I still get inquiries, but I don't do the coaching these days. I say, see Jeff, and he will help guide them because he knows he's putting the content practically on a daily basis.
Probably multiple times a day.
Yeah, multiple times a day. Probably him and Jack Kelly are the ones that produce the most content out of anybody that I know. And I thought I produced a lot of content. They produce twice what I do. So go find him. And I'm serious. Go find him and guys like him who are and women like him who are teaching people what it takes to get a job tomorrow. Not what you did back in 1999, tomorrow.
And that's my next session today, is with someone's son who I had helped previously. And I'll take good care of them, obviously.
Yeah, I know you will.
So with job hunting, one of the things that always comes to mind, I was away for Thanksgiving. I had helped the son of my wife's, it was like a wife's cousin. And one of the sons was having trouble. He graduated right before the pandemic, and he had knee surgery and recovered from it just in time for the pandemic, and almost landed something right away. And of course, everything froze. So it took him a long time. And one of the fun things that surfaced is the cousin came over to me and said, I can't believe on the interview, he said, I want to go to an organization where I can get some mentoring and there's people I can learn from. And we'd never say that. I said, but I told him to say that.
But that's what young people are saying. That's what young people are saying. I know someone who is a director of quality assurance. She follows me all the time. She might be listening to this interview now. But that was her issue in quitting her job, is that even at a director level, she's a young woman, but she wanted more mentoring, more guidance, more potential opportunities through the relationship rather than being the workhorse. And when you're the workhorse, you're not really learning a lot. You're just learning how to do things a little bit quicker, a little bit faster. That you may learn something, and I'm not saying you don't, but obviously everybody needs to kind of define for themselves what they want when they go into a job. And I really believe that young people these days need to also provide an exit strategy. And it could be a year from now, could be 2 years now. The most thing that most coaches want, right, is clarity before you come to them. Most coaches balk, probably 99% of them balk at the, I really don't want to know. I just want any job. And they'll tell them, go come back. I know, because I was one of them once upon a time. That was one of the frustrations of coaching to me, is that I couldn't always provide the right solution for the person that didn't want to know. I understand that game a whole lot better now, because a lot of it is taking people or going along with people for the ride, which a lot of times coaches won't be able to do. You may have to charge something, or you may have to reconfigure something, but I think coaches very often get caught up in between, you know, wanting someone that can do it and that can do it in a short period of time so they could brag about it and get the money. When really, with young people, it takes a little bit more time, especially when they're still figuring out things. There's some that know what they're doing. There's some who really don't know what they want to do. And that's why a lot of times the parents and things need to kind of sit back, because there's a whole new world out there. You're going to be talking about, when I went into the field of management information systems, and go, wait a second. They're going to go, what is that? Who does management information system now? Now, they may do some form of IT, but even when you say the IT, it's like, where in IT? So unless you can be very specific and very helpful in that way, you're not being helpful. You might be even misleading some people, because they think that, you know, that old advice does work, and you're the only person they relied on asking. Which really they should be asking a whole bunch of people, including your friends and your contacts and contacts of contacts. That's how you can help.
And one of the fun things, folks, is just recognize you're going to run into parent-child issues if you're the one giving them the advice.
If you're doing young people. And I should say anybody 40 and below are subject to scrutiny in that way. Not just the ones coming out of college. I've known 40-year-olds their parents are still riding them because they don't feel like they were in a stable career. Well, they spent 10 years somewhere. They spent 5 years somewhere. That's stability now. Back in our time when I was coming up, and I came up behind you even, but even that's a long time ago, is, you know, we believed that a company was going to take care of us. That was never really the case. I mean, in my wife's case, it was. She spent 30 years at the same company. She was lucky. And it was on a grant. It wasn't on the employer's actual dime. So she got, that was a God-blessed opportunity. How many of us had that opportunity?
30 years of grants?
Yes, 30 years of grants. Can you believe it? It's something that has to be reapplied every year, and it has to be approved by people who had the money. And there was a couple of years where she, you know, sweating because they thought the grant was going to be removed. That's not going to be happening anymore. It would be rare when people can come out 10 years from something, much less 15 or 20 years, 5 years in some cases.
So we've been talking about where the market is now. We've been talking about the easiest time of the year for networking now. Mm-hmm. And it's not that tough any time of the year, but this is the easiest one.
Right.
And we've been talking about, shall we say, not getting into the middle of your kid's job search with your antique advice that stopped being good back when dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Right.
What haven't we covered yet that we really should today?
We should probably cover the fact that the world is changing very quickly. And in the sense of the way we use social networks now is changing. Any social network, actually, in my opinion, is a possibility for someone to be employed, not just LinkedIn. I don't think LinkedIn is a great hub for employment, and every single job seeker, every single professional needs to be on LinkedIn. But I think there's value in the TikToks. You look at TikTok hashtag career advice, it has more than 80 million different subject lines and content to it. A lot of it's very helpful. You're not on TikTok, are you?
I am on TikTok. I'm not using it for career stuff, to be honest with you. I frankly got bored with TikTok for career stuff. And I don't fit the demographic of the people who are successful there. I do something else on TikTok that I really enjoy and I'm getting a lot of traction from that broadens me and makes me more interested.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. That's a great. I'll have to go look now. I have an account there. I don't think I follow you on it because I think I kind of put a hiatus on it for a while until I figured out what I really want to do with it. But I think the hashtags on a lot of these social networks are very, very, very useful. Twitter's probably has the longest history of hashtags. Some of the history probably won't do as much, but some of the newer stuff, especially when we get about, especially if you're a manufacturer worker now, you're watching what's going on with the hashtag StrikeMiss, which used to be StrikeGiving, which used to be Strike October, which all has to do with all the strikes. And what they're doing is very interesting now. For years, and this is for those who are in manufacturing, but I think there's some lessons to be learned here, is that some of the industries are the workers gotten together very tight-knit to fight the two-tier contractual system. That's right. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but what that is that the people who've been in the game or been the companies for a long time under one contract get higher benefits than somebody who just got hired new for the same job. And what often happens is that what was beginning to happen is that there became two different types of workforces, the ones who haves, and those are the ones who are the C-suite, the ones who almost can have a little bit more, and that's the ones who have the better contract, and the people who've come in the last 3, 4, or 5 years, and you know, it's a big difference. So I think one thing that we need to learn, though, and I think young people are learning, is that they're beginning to do things together. They're beginning to job search a little bit more together. They're sharing more information together. They are saying, you can see that on the social networks. And no matter what the clicks are, in the social clicks, whether you talk to somebody every day, you follow certain hashtags, they're very useful for information. And a lot of people don't know that two-tier contract issue has appeared, because the rest of the working world, it is pretty much everybody for themselves and what you negotiate or what you don't negotiate, right? In this particular case, they're getting together saying, no, we want this, we want to do this together. And I think that's a very important discussion to be had here, because that never happened before. It was gladly, and this started like, I think in these late 70s, early 80s, where, you know, there's the privileged and not so privileged. And there you had divided workforce. So people obviously couldn't make any gains or anything that would work where a lot of people were happy, except for those who were in it for the longest. Now they're all kind of getting together, and not every single industry in the manufacturing industry or the unionized industry, I should say, but they're coming together to say, hey, this needs to change. We need to cut this out. He's doing the same job as I am. I'm getting $5-$10 more dollars an hour. I mean, most of us would, and most of us do hate it when somebody's making a whole lot more than what we're making, right? For the same job. So I think that's very important. But I think even a bigger lesson is that job seekers need to learn their industry and start researching before they jump in, so they understand the scope of each of the industries. Whether it's unionized or not unionized, I think the bigger lesson is you've got to know your market value, and it's going to change, and it's been changing. And I think one of the things we talk about market-wise, and this is a diatribe, I'm sorry, but I think this is an important point, is that people working from home, some of them are going to receive less money, and some of them start getting pay cuts because they rather work from home and they're getting paid by the region as opposed to what they used to do when they're getting paid by headquarters or working at the headquarters or working at a building. So all of that to say, it has changed so much and it's changing much, a lot. And I think a lot of people, the anomalies are being exposed. And like I said, every fiber that we've known the workplace to be in the past is being tested. And if it doesn't stand the test, people are calling it out.
Very true. I know Google has just begun implementing the pay cuts for people working at home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Approximately 15% of gross salary for those who will be working from home. And it's kind of stunning to suddenly discover that your salary is being reduced by $15,000 to $20,000
for the same job. And for the same job. Only difference is that somebody's going into the office and somebody's staying home, but the workload is the same.
Or higher when you work from home, because there's the expectation you're always on call.
Yes, yes, that's really, it's a really critical point. And I think one of the things that people will have to understand, the less you know, the more you're going to be taken advantage of because companies don't care. They also are copycat companies, especially big tech companies. When they see one, if Google's doing it, you can guarantee that Microsoft is going to follow somewhere. Twitter's going to follow somewhere. Yahoo's going to follow. All of them going to follow. They're going to end up in the same place. But when somebody starts saying, you know, they're doing the same job, maybe we should go ahead and give them that 15% back, they'll all fall in line. They all stick together. And that's, job seekers need to kind of understand, you know, where they stand as far as what their value is and where everybody else stands too. It may take an extra step, but if you do it before you start your job search, you will be able to navigate this a little bit better than if you find out in the middle, uh-oh, I got an offer. What do I do now? It's too late.
Right.
For most people, it's too late.
And that nice boss of yours who is very friendly during the interview process and when you're on board, they have no authority to rule any of these policies. They're going to give you a nice pat on the back and shrug their shoulders. Go, I'm so sorry. It's out of my hands.
Yes. Yes. It's in God's hands. Like the movie with Michael J. Fox. The guy said, you see this? This is God's time. God's time is my time. And the same principle applies, you know? And so, yeah, it's something that, you know, it's work to job search. If you do it right, it's going to be a little bit sweat.
Yes, it will. Mark, how can people find out more about you and the work that you're doing?
Thevoiceofjobseekers.com. We'll find about everything there. A bunch of videos, a bunch of podcasts, a bunch of articles. Just a bunch of.
It's more than a bunch. It's a boatload.
It's quite a bit. Not as much as Jeff. Jeff is. I think he every day is like something new. It's like, oh, there's Jeff. I know where to find him because I can follow his timeline.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you. And folks, we'll be back soon with more. I'm Jeff Alpin, the Big Game Hunter. Visit my website, TheBigGameHunter.us. As Mark said so well, there is a ton there that you can watch, listen to, or read that will help you. Also, you can schedule time for a free discovery call with me or schedule time for coaching. You can find out about my courses that are available online. I'd love to help you in one way or another. And if this isn't the right time, put that address in your phone. Again, that's the biggamehunter.us with my name, Jeff Altman. And this way you can get back to me when you'd like. Also connect with me on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/IN/thebiggamehunter. Have a terrific day. And most importantly, be great. Take care.